Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
It's the 31st of July. I'm Miles Maftian, editorial director. I'm sitting here with Galen Dahl. Galen is our managing editor, and we're trying to bring you the latest developments from around the region. There's certainly a lot of things happening, and there's a lot of things happening at Visegrad Insight additionally. But let's move to what's actually happening in the region. So let's start with Ukraine. Galen, I know that there are a ton of things happening. Maybe you can just try your best to think of what the developments were from this past week, what kind of things we should be focusing on, what are the main sort of points there that we want to leave our audience with.
I think everybody has been paying attention to the news that kind of came over the weekend that there were drone strikes that actually hit a couple buildings in Moscow. They were, of course, office buildings, and it was in the middle of the night, so no one was there and injured, and that was most likely intentional. But the reach of the war, as Zelensky kind of mentioned, it's getting closer, and it's returning to the territory of Russia. And I think this is a good symbolic move for Ukraine's push, especially since the counteroffensive has, while there has been progress, there has been notable progress this past week, but it has been slow overall going, and definitely not living up to the potential that I think many people had in mind, initially a couple months ago. With this in mind, though, there have been a couple, larger moves, specifically in the Donetsk region, and the people are the Institute for the Study of War is noticing that there was a strike on the Kohar Bridge, which is kind of between Crimea and Kherson. And this could have kind of a larger strategic impact in the long run. I think it's interesting that this happens, and then just on the tail of the announcement that there is going to be a Ukrainian-backed peace summit, which will be held in Saudi Arabia sometime in just the coming week. So it's very soon. The exact details haven't been released yet. But I find the timing to be kind of good for Ukraine, just as they're on the kind of the front foot and that they're pushing for peace talks. When you think back just a week ago or 2 weeks ago, Russia was saying that they were all for peace talks, but that was kind of before this more recent move.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So there's two things that you said that I wanted to highlight. So first is, it's interesting that Russia is refraining from actually reporting on the Chonhar Bridge incident, right? This kind of shows that there's a definite intentional oversight there when it comes to their strategic communication. And secondly, it's a question that we often, we're asking our Future of Ukraine fellows very often. We're asking a lot of our Ukrainian colleagues and, what would they sort of understand to be peace, right? In Ukraine, what would this actually mean? And that's kind of the interesting thing that there was a consideration that there are some fundamental points that are up for discussion. But it's like those larger questions that we can't get into all of them. But of course, we're talking about the restoration of Ukraine's territorial integrity, so the whole territorial integrity. But then the question is that from 22 or is that from 2014, right?
I think it's from before 2014.
Yeah.
I think that is their stance.
Yeah. Well, that's their stance, and that's totally understandable. But that itself might be one of those non-compromising, drawing a line in the sand type of thing that could blow up the peace talks just from the outset.
Absolutely.
And of course, the withdrawal of Russian troops and a tribunal, right? And we, a tribunal for those who were responsible. And we'll put a link in the description, but for this article that we've had our Future of Ukraine fellow, Oleksandr Drig, she has discussed the tribunal. We've seen certainly a push internationally for this, that there was an established tribunal for this. So we don't know exactly what this all would entail. But I think when you put all of these together in one sort of package, you then worry that you know, one of these may be compromised in order to ensure, let's say, territorial integrity or a withdrawal of Russian troops, or one of those aspects might trump all of these other ones. So I think it's, we'll know more when it happens. And I think it's going to be interesting to see like the transparency behind it too. So how much access we actually will have to these peace talks.
Absolutely. I mean, you got to think that this week, representatives from the Kyiv government, I believe, are meeting in Washington to kind of discuss the first step of security guarantees for Ukraine as they, if they join NATO, and how that would look like. And I think that they're going to be very realistic about those discussions. Obviously, we won't know, all the details that will come out of that until it's kind of finalized. But my guess is there's going to be like a negotiator, like, what are you willing to accept? And it's, demographically, it's going to get really complicated, because you got to think of like some of the occupied territories and regions, the way you're having kind of like, ethnic cleansing essentially occurring, where, in a couple of years, there was a report from the New York Times that came out and said that like there's a couple of cities that in 5 years' time will be 80% Russian. So what do we do then with those civilian populations? I mean, these are all larger questions that will have to be answered. And right now there aren't there. And so that's what the peace talks will have to kind of address. But again, without both sides being there, Russia won't be at the Saudi meeting, the summit. I mean, many Western nations have already agreed to join, but I believe they said, I think Vladimir Putin said something like, as long as Ukraine is on the offensive foot or the offensive move, that Russia won't be involved in the peace talks, which I find it funny when they're defending their territory to call it offensive, but not funny in a humorous way, but ridiculous. And this is, it is all happening just after, we had the article from last week about Russia's attacks on the grain, infrastructure of Ukraine, and how that has kind of a wider global implication. I mean, this could put pressure, interestingly, on Moscow going towards the negotiating table, even if they're in a losing posture. I think it will depend on what Kyiv in the end is willing to agree to, and what we kind of understand coming out of the next just couple of weeks. It'll be fascinating when we talk about food as well as energy security, which are also going to be affecting the wider Europe in the coming months.
Yeah, and I know that there's also the element there where because the Ukrainian counteroffensive wasn't so, I'm not going to say successful because it's still ongoing, but because everyone was so sort of surprised and remained really optimistic after Ukraine was able to defend its territory so well, I think we all sort of assumed that given all of the ammunitions, the logistical support, etc., that the counteroffensive would have been quicker than what we had originally envisioned. And maybe that's part of why there is this more of a push to actually go to a negotiating table in the first place.
Absolutely. The fact that it's Ukrainian backed, that gives it a lot more credence for the West. And we're hopeful for something along those lines. But also, I do think that the fundamental steps that you kind of mentioned at the beginning, several of those pills are going to be really hard to swallow for Moscow. So I don't think we're there yet. Unfortunately, I think there's going to be quite a bit more conflict to come. But it's a good first step. I think it's a good, solid first step.
Yeah, and I think so it's more sort of security heavy, this outlook this week, because I think, leading up to the Slovak-Polish elections, we'll focus much more on the election race itself and results, poll results, and so forth. But I think the largest story right now in the region relates to the Wagner Group. So it's been reported, right? So it's been widely reported that there's these movements of Wagner troops near the Polish and Lithuanian borders. I think that there's definitely heightened tensions in all three Baltic states. There has been cause of public concern, right? Especially when it comes to Lithuania and Latvia, considering what has happened in Lithuania and Poland, obviously too, right? From the border crisis. Yeah. And I think those responsible officials of the countries, they haven't really issued statements that there is a direct threat. They haven't gone as far as this, but we're already seeing that there's steps to sort of strengthen the security situation. And this has been announced sort of simultaneously.
Well, it's so complicated because I don't think we know yet to make what is happening in Wagner. A lot of intelligence reports are, you know, kind of vague, and some are obviously going to be misleading for different strategic purposes. But you're absolutely right. I mean, both Lithuanian and Polish prime ministers have warned about the threat of Wagner on their border. And Poland did send snipers to the Belarusian border after there were some bullet holes that were found in border guard vehicles. And I we have to take, of course, that threat seriously. But even the de facto leader of Poland last week mentioned that, you know, in light of this, you know, enhanced security response, that they want to double the size of the armed forces. And it's a bold statement. It's a very bold statement, considering the fact that this is just on the cusp of kind of an interesting smaller story that I don't think was quite well covered in the region, but we do have in the outlook. And this is related to Polish, the contracts between Poland getting different arms from South Korea. And they had their first defensive contract went through this year. It was massive, massive contract. Now they have a second one, and it's kind of stumbling. And the reason it's stumbling is that a lot of times for these larger contracts to actually be fulfilled, it requires Korean export credit agencies to kind of help finalize them. But right now, there's actually a lack of them. They have limited financial support. So whether or not this will actually be able to go through is a big question. So even though these kind of, you know, promises that, you know, they're going to increase the armed forces in Poland, and of course they are, they definitely will, but to what extent, there might be limitations that are beyond the Warsaw's control.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And, you know, it's also interesting that all of this kind of comes at a time when even the Wagner group, they were essentially saying that they have suspended recruiting indefinitely because it has just such large personnel reserves. And we just don't know, right? We don't know how much that is. We don't know we hear about armament and we hear about all of these different military procurements. You know, we had an event last week with Adrian, who was, yes, right, who was discussing the sort of military buildup in Romania. But the question still remains as to who's going to be manning this, who's going to be actually the ones defending the country from the outset, given the low levels of trust in a lot of institutions, especially in Romania. So I think this is certainly something that we definitely need to keep an eye on. I think security will be a major factor for the Polish elections as well. And I think the same will be in Slovakia, but given the fact that Poland is so close to Ukraine and not so far from Lviv and so forth, I think that this is going to be sort of one of the main, apart from maybe economy, one of the main aspects that Polish voters will look to. Galen, thanks so much for joining this week. That pretty much brings an end to today's podcast episode. We really appreciate all of our listeners and all of our subscribers. Thank you so much for your time and attention, and we hope that you found the discussions as stimulating as we did. Don't forget to subscribe, review, and connect with us on social media or via email to share your feedback or suggestions for future topics. Your engagement means the world to us, and it helps us shape our show. Make sure to join us next week for another thought-provoking conversation that we'll have and for another wrap-up of the weekly news in CEE. Thank you.